The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Money FM 89.3, the best of your money. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Asia Pacific markets are trading mixed this morning as investors digest the latest inflation data out of the United States. Joining me now as we break down all the market action is Stephen Innes. In addition to being a friend of the show, Stephen is the managing partner of SPI Asset Management, and I'm Michelle Martin. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Michelle. Nice to speak with you again.
Always good to speak with you. Now, we start this morning with U.S. consumer prices and inflation. Traders were glued to their computer screens yesterday evening at around 9:30 when the latest consumer price index figures were released. And the data shows that inflation in the U.S. has fallen on an annual basis for the sixth straight month. The CPI ticks in at 6.5% for the month of December, as compared with a year earlier, that is down from more than 7% in November. Stephen, the first question I want to ask about the latest data is this. Do these numbers indicate that the Fed's strategy, the action taken by the Fed, is working? Is inflation coming under control?
I think it is partly, but I think they've got some other help from weather when you think about it here, because the fact that weather, SPR releases, and the fact that the China COVID situation has really taken a lot of pressure off energy prices. So that really helped bring down CPI. Gasoline prices had dropped almost 10%. So that was a big help. But I think we're looking at elements of the underlying economy. It's certainly helping out there. And I think this is when you look at the super core readings is what the market's referring to right now. These are the key inflation categories around core goods, shelter, and core services at shelter. Those are dropping. And this is what the market's reading. And these are things that the Fed looks at, so the market's fairly encouraged here. I don't think we should dance around the obvious here. I think we're going to have a 25 basis point hike in February, but we've still got lots of worry as to how the economy is going to fall into place after so much and so quick hiking pace that the Federal Reserve Board has embarked on.
So the headline figure is 6.5%. Factor out food and energy prices, and the core inflation rate in the U.S. comes down to 5.7%. Wages and prices of services are still rising quickly, though. So how hard is it going to be for the Fed to bring inflation down to that target level of 2%? There's still some ways to go, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, if we look at what's happening around, especially jobless claims last night, that was a very strong number again. Continues to point to resilience in the labor market, and this is one of the dynamics that the Fed is really looking at. So, that has some lingering inflation concerns that there could be a second act of inflation hitting the markets right now, especially with financial conditionings easing. And this is a problem right now. If you're sitting around the Fed board right now and you're moving into earnings season, the Fed's probably hoping that there's going to be weaker earnings and going to drive stock markets down, prevents them from driving it down, because they don't want these easing financial conditions to happen right now. They want it to be delayed to your point, Michelle, to inflation is finally beaten. And we are a long way from that point. And that's still a concern that the markets will have to deal with, although the trend is your friend when it comes to inflation. And it does look like the trend is dropping, however.
Petrol prices fell significantly in the latest U.S. consumer price data. But if we look at the oil markets, and as you mentioned, prices are starting to rise again, thanks in part to demand from China. We'll talk more about this in a minute, but I'm wondering if oil prices continue to trend higher, will this make the Fed's job harder?
Yeah, of course. I mean, the China reopening is going to make the Fed's job harder because they're going to put pressure on commodities. Commodity prices are going to rise. You've got the huge demand in China starting to pick up when people start coming out of the COVID cocoon. Obviously, that will spread base metal pressures, but you also have to think demand pressures around food and what have you. Those are key factors we're going to have to keep an eye on, the China inflation gauges particularly, because that could spread inflation through the world.
A lot of our listeners want to know how these latest numbers will impact the Fed's next rate hike expected in February. Did you say earlier you're expecting 25 basis points versus 50?
Yeah, I think so. I think the writing's on the wall, and I just think what the objective here, maybe not so much based on the CPI print itself, but perhaps the Fed wants to pause to see how the lagged effects of these massively quick rate hikes are going to affect on the economy, and probably take heed of what corporate America's going to suggest that is happening under the surface here. You know, we are moving into corporate earnings season. We start off with the big banks, and as you know, we've got Goldman Sachs has laid off 3,000 plus people. Jamie Dimon is out there telling the world that we're going to be in a world of hurt as far as economic conditions happen. So there could be a lot of pain on Main Street here, and I think the Fed doesn't want to punish Main Street, but they really want to temper Wall Street's ambitions, and it's a bit of a trade-off. I think the Feds are going to have to deal with at some point going through 2023 and as we move into 2024.
If we look at the market's reaction to the inflation data overnight, the major indices rallied, but not a lot. The Nasdaq and Dow finish up about 0.2%. The S&P 500 rose 0.3%. Why didn't we see a stronger reaction, Stephen? Why weren't the markets more impressed by this fall in prices?
I think, one, you know, everybody was in the same boat. Everybody was reading inflation lower, and as you can tell, it came out surprisingly right on the numbers. So that, to me, suggests that, yeah, everybody was there. But I think, getting back to this corporate America idea again, I think investors are becoming increasingly concerned about the damage to corporate America and how extensive economic cratering will be due to the lagged effects of the Fed's aggressive rate hikes. You know, I think a bigger miss, bigger downside miss on CPI might have led to a bias toward much more buoyant markets, but I think the inline print still leaves investors in a state of ambiguity, and that's one thing they'll probably have to deal with for the next little while.
U.S. stocks are off to a good start this year, with the blue chip indices up about 3 to 5%. Small cap stocks are doing even better. The Russell 2000 is up 6.5% since the start of the year. Barriers exist, Stephen. So what might stand in the way of this rally continuing?
Well, you know, it's obviously if we have the recession second act, or we have some weird issue in China where perhaps after the Lunar New Year they have to lock down, something unexpected has to rock the boat here. And this is something that we have to keep our eye on. You know, I think rallies can't always extend one way. I think people have to come up for air. I think there's going to be a revaluation of what's happened so far. But I think we're going to have a different landscape in 2023. I think we're going to have a lot less aggressive Fed to deal with. We're going to have some really positive impulses on global growth from China reopening. We're already seeing that playing out in Europe. The hard economic data globally, in my view, has been quite resilient. But where we're seeing the pain right now is in the survey data, the anticipatory data. Generally, hard data catches up or down to that data. If the hard data does catch down to what the PMI surveys are telling us, then I think we could be in some trouble as far as equities go.
Market attention will turn to corporate earnings this evening with a focus on the financial sector. Citigroup, JP Morgan, and Wells Fargo all report earnings tonight. Let's turn our attention from the US to China, Stephen, where, as you recently wrote, the speed of change has been absolutely astonishing. In a flick of a switch, Beijing has completely dismantled all its COVID-19 restrictions. We're also seeing reversals on the treatment of big tech companies, property market restrictions, and more. In fact, we've seen a $100 billion rally in Chinese equities in recent days. In your view, Stephen, is this rally in Chinese equities warranted? And how fast do you expect China's economy to grow this year?
Well, on the first part, I think yes, because we've gone from a sell-all environment to a buy-all environment. So we're coming off some really, really weak valuations in Chinese equity markets, which are getting buttressed by, you know, some changes in policies, which you correctly alluded to, Michelle, not just monetary policies, but structural policies and along with regulation policies. And they're lessening tie-ups in a lot of different sectors, especially technology sectors. Now, How quickly will the China economy recover? That's a really good question. That's probably the great unknown. I think part of the reason why I think we're going to have a bit of a pause again is the fact that we have to let the economic data catch up to the markets, the market momentum. That's always a tricky part here because markets, especially equity markets, tend to look down the road, whereas commodity markets tend to deal in the near and present. Right now, we're seeing both catching up. And this is a very favorable outlook because it tells me that the market and also the real economy is starting to pick up because commodities are a real demand. When commodities start going up, that suggests there's real physical need and real physical buyers out there.
Great point. China's markets were among the world's worst performers last year. The Shenzhen Composite fell 22%. Shanghai and Hong Kong both dropped 15%. But Hong Kong started to gain some steam around October last year. The Hang Seng Index now up more than 30% over the past 3 months. Shenzhen and Shanghai are rallying as well. Let's break down what China's reopening could mean for different segments of the market. And let's start with China's currency, the renminbi. It's currently trading at around 6.75 to the US dollar, and it's appreciated 6% since the start of the year, less than 2 weeks ago. Stephen, do you expect the renminbi to continue strengthening? And if so, at what point do you think the Chinese authorities may intervene to stop it?
I think we're going to see some intervention not far from where we are right now to slow the pace down. I think as soon as we get through, you know, we're very close to my guess is around 670 because it's getting too strong relative to what we refer to as the CFETS basket, which is the basket of other currencies in the Asia bloc. However, looking at what's happening in China, looking at what's happening in Japan, I should say, where the Bank of Japan looks to be moving off their yield curve control. This is actually strengthening the yen dramatically. This offers China more wiggle room from a trade-weighted basis. So, you know, I'm trying to reconcile what's happening in the Japanese currency versus what's going to happen in the yen. And I may pull off that. I may pull off that idea that we could see some pushback. They may lessen the pushback because of strengthening in the yen, which can actually promote stronger currencies throughout Asia markets.
Next up with oil, if we see a strong uptick in China's economy, that would presumably increase its demand for oil and send prices higher. Are we starting to see this?
Yeah, I think the writing was on the wall when they dropped the quarantine rules, because immediately that would, you know, people, if you've been stuck in a COVID lockdown for 3 years, obviously you want to get out and travel, and we're seeing that starting to pick up dramatically. So as we enter the Lunar New Year cycle, and jet fuel demand has been really stellar, and that's actually providing the updraft in oil markets right now. But of course, we still have to deal with what happens after the Lunar New Year, where they're expected the second massive wave of COVID to hit. And this is something that we have to factor in. Again, getting back to my point here, where commodity markets are more a real economy rather than stocks, we could see oil prices come off a little bit again after Lunar New Year on that resurgent COVID effect, which will drop mobility. But I think it's only going to be a temporary drop. I think as the economy starts to pick up more steam as we move through 2023, considering the market is relatively short oil barrels, and we look at OPEC's prudence to maintain a relatively high floor on oil prices, I think we could trend towards $100 Brent this year.
Just picking up on your point on commodities, before its economy went into a cocoon, Chinese demand was fueling demand in commodities across the board. And apart from oil, I'm wondering, are there other commodities that you're watching closely now for price spikes?
Yeah, mostly all hard commodities. I think this is where we're going to see the price spikes, you know, coal, copper, everything that's got some industrial use to it right now. However, you know, we have to be a little bit cautious as to how we approach these. You know, again, this is a real economic uptick again. We have to keep our eye on the data. I think it's the data play here that's going to drive the next wave of prices. I think a lot of speculative moves have been made, but now it's up to the real economy and the economic data to do the heavy lifting for basically all of the commodity spaces right now.
Copper rose above $9,000 a ton for the first time since June, and it's risen nearly 30% over the past 6 months. I wanted to zoom out for just a minute, Stephen. Do you expect the strength of China's markets and the country's reopening will have potential knock-on effects for the rest of the region? For example, might China's reopening give Singapore's economy a boost?
Oh, definitely. You have to factor in that Singapore is an exporter of electronic goods into China. So when people's consumption starts to pick up, Singapore is going to be a big beneficiary. And also, we can't factor out the tourism. Chinese tourists will start flocking back to Singapore, and that'll also provide a boost to a lot of restaurants and tourism and lots of other servicing industries. So that's going to be a big boost, and not to mention the real estate markets. I know that a lot of Chinese investors are back into Singapore, and I even noticed get a golf membership now is almost $1 million at Sentosa.
Oh.
So things are really thriving in Singapore by using the golf membership index levels.
That's a good one. We're going to have to dive deep into that later. We've covered the U.S. and China, and Stephen, I'd like to pick your brain now quickly on a few other currencies and assets. Let's start with the Japanese yen. After dropping to 150 against the U.S. dollar late last year, which was a 32-year low, the yen has been rallying a bit. It is now trading around 130 against the greenback. You mentioned this at the start of the show, but for listeners who've just joined us, what do you think is fueling the strength in the Japanese yen?
Well, it's very much a rates play initially. When U.S. yields started to drop, then the dollar demand started to drop also. But what the big move was when there was some adjustment on what they refer to as the Bank of Japan's yield curve control mechanism. That's when they go into buy bonds in the market at a specific level. They adjusted that higher, the rate that they're buying at. This was the first subtle sign that they're pulling off this very, very low interest rate policy. But now I think the second wave is picking up right now, where markets are speculating that the Bank of Japan is going to do away with yield curve control completely, if not raise interest rates above zero. This is all getting predicated on labor negotiations in the springtime, where it's anticipated that growth in wages could rise over 3%, and this would spur inflation in the Japanese economy. And I think this is the lean that the market's taking right now, and I think this opens up more downside on dollar yen, where we could actually trade back down to 125 level, and that's sort of where I'm anticipating the market to move in the not too distant future.
The euro has also done an about face. It was trading below parity against the dollar as recently as September, and now 1 euro will buy $1.08. Are you a euro bull? Do you think it will continue to strengthen, or has it maxed out?
No, I think it'll strengthen, and it's there's a couple of factors. They're just not interest rate differentials and this kind of stuff here. You know, we're looking at the dramatic fall in bond and stock volatility across the broader markets. This suggests to me that the dollar is not necessarily needed as a safe haven anymore. So its efficiency as the dollar cash as a risk-off hedge is dropping significantly. I'm also looking at stock 600 trackers. These are ETF trackers of European equity inflows. They're showing renewed surges as investors become more confident about growth outside of the U.S., hence improving corporate profit landscape in Europe. So looking at this objectively right now, if we start to see the return of U.S.-based long-only investor flow, this is really vital to driving the euro higher. I think folks shouldn't be looking at any of the metrics that they typically use, i.e. IMM positioning, which is gauge that Forex traders use to gauge where money is flowing in the broader markets. What this is going to boil down to is real money and corporate U.S. dollar cash, i.e. that proverbial dry powder sitting on the headlines or on the sidelines. I think this matters more, and it's not reflected in these positioning surveys. So if U.S. money starts flowing into Europe, this is going to give a big boost to the euro, and I expect the euro to be trading in the neighborhood of about 115 by year end.
What about gold, Stephen? The precious metal is currently trading a notch above $1,900, up from about $1,600 as recently as November. So will the year of the rabbit also be a year of the gold rally?
It's interesting. You know, we were very bullish on gold, and to a degree, I'm still bullish on gold. But I'm starting to see global growth coming back here. I'm starting to see the economies recover, and I'm trying to figure out how gold fits into this landscape with the drop in bond volatility and the drop in stock market volatility, and perhaps recession risks getting priced out of global economies and even a potential soft landing. So we have to constantly address what's going on in the bigger picture. I think, however, gold as a correlation hedge with a weaker U.S. dollar stands out, and that's the reason more so that I'm staying long gold, because of that tight correlation hedge. It really does tend to work year in, year out. So I think the weaker dollar opens up a higher gold trade for 2023.
Well, it's the year of the rabbit, and Chinese New Year is fast approaching. The rabbit apparently quite a prosperous animal, according to some. So what do you think? Will the year of rabbit be likely a prosperous one for investors?
Well, it should be, as long as the rabbit doesn't go down the rabbit hole. That's the that's the main thing we have to keep an eye on here. You know, there's still a lot of risks in the markets right now. We've still got a war going on in the border, and NATO's borders, and this is still a worry. We've got tensions between China and the U.S., although they're lessening a little bit, but that's always something we have to keep an eye on. We have to keep an eye on geopolitical risks in the region, you know, generally spurred by North Korea, although, you know, that doesn't look overly threatening at any time when it does, but it just does pick up. So we have to keep an eye on these things, but I think generally we're going to have a calmer market this year. I think traders may have to get a little bit of aggressive chasing alpha outside of China. What I mean by that, generating profits outside of the China risks right now, and I think this is where the balance of risk is going to be traded. And I think as recession risks come off and markets move into the soft landing, I think people and investors are going to be a lot happier in 2023. So I'm looking for a prosperous year this year.
Well, I look to your notes as a guidepost for the market. So it's a real pleasure to speak with you again, Stephen. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Michelle. Thanks for having me on.
He's Stephen Innes, Managing Partner of SPI Asset Management.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.